All right, here we go. Welcome to the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Michael Lev, coming at you on Apple, Spotify, also Tucson.com. If you're watching the video version of this podcast, we appreciate you for always watching us or listening to us. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and comment to the Wildcast Podcast and find all of our work on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster mobile app. It's a busy time of year. December is always a busy time in Tucson, Arizona, because you know you've got bowl games coming up. You've got Arizona basketball in full swing. The number one ranked Arizona Wildcats basketball team, which is kind of no surprise after their win over Auburn and then Purdue losing at home. But, man, Arizona basketball, number one in the country for the second time under Tommy Lloyd. And then you got the Arizona football team that's going to the Holiday Bowl, Lev, after finishing the season 9-3. It's a good time to be an Arizona Wildcat.
Yes, it really is. 9-3 football season. None of us saw that coming. Even the most optimistic among us, I think, probably projected 7-5, something like that. That felt like a best case scenario. I definitely didn't think, even in my, like, I kind of saw it coming when they were 4-3 and they lost those two close games midseason, but even I didn't think they would win their last five games in a row.
No.
And most of them were pretty lopsided, right? I mean, the Kansas game was close. Cincinnati game was certainly in doubt for a while, but they've looked really good. They have a chance to do something historic in the Holiday Bowl, and that is to win 10 games for the second time in three seasons.
Yep.
It has been done four times in the history of Arizona football, never in such close proximity. The four times were 1993, 98, 2014, and 2023.
Yep.
So really, truly remarkable achievement by this team. And there's, you know, a handful of guys who were on the 23 team as starters who are still starters for this team. All recognized by the Big 12 last week and probably will be recognized by the Associated Press with our all Big 12 teams that are coming out later in the week. Those three guys, of course, are Noah Fifita, Dalton Johnson, and Traden Stukes.
Yep.
They're the through line from the 23 cats to the 25 cats, and they wouldn't be in this position without those guys.
No. And then if you want to add in the third team, all Big 12 selection, and Genesis Smith, he was also a part of that 23 team as well. He was a youngster. He wasn't the players that Dalton Johnson and Traden Stukes were for that team, but still a very big part of that club. And, you know, those guys, I think it's a good segue, Lev, into talking about the all Big 12 team.
Yeah.
We'll also talk about the Holiday Bowl as well and talk about the matchup against SMU, which I think is going to be a really fun one for Arizona. I think these teams are perfectly matched. It's like SMU's high-level passing attack against Arizona's passing defense. And I think we're going to see kind of a clash of some really good programs in San Diego. But Lev, you mentioned that Noah Fifita, Traden Stukes, and Dalton Johnson were named to the All Big 12 first team. And man, I was thinking, you know, was Nick Foles an All Pac-12 quarterback? And, you know, right before the announcement came out that Noah Fifita was the first team All Big 12 selection, I did some digging and I'm like, man, no, you got to go all the way back to 1975, 50 years ago. The last time Arizona had a first-team all-conference selection, which was when they were in the WAC. And then the last time that Arizona had multiple defensive backs as first-team all-conference selections. And remember, they had Chris McAllister. They had Brandon Sanders. They had some Tony Bowie. Like, they had so many really good defensive backs over the course of the program history. But the last time they had two defensive backs be named first-team all-conference selections, you got to go back to 1972. With Bob White and Jackie Wallace also in the WAC as well. And Noah Fifita is one of three quarterbacks to earn first-team all-conference honors in Arizona history. The other one is Bruce Hill, who did it in 1975. And then you got to go all the way back to the Border Conference days from 1933 to 1935, Arizona football legend Ted Bland. Lev, what do you know about Ted Bland? Who could forget about Ted Bland?
He sounds exciting. I know nothing about Ted Bland.
I had no idea this guy existed until Fita was the first team all-conference selection. But
I mean, I bet you Greg Hansen knows a lot about Ted Bland.
Oh, yeah. He'll
just have a feeling.
He's got territorial cup stats from Ted Bland's career at Arizona. But I just think that those three guys, I think they deserve it. I think if there's anybody that deserves this season, it's those three guys because they have chosen Arizona multiple times. And I mean, when it's all said and done, these guys are going to be Arizona lifers in an era of college athletics where it's very hard or it's very rare now to see guys finish what they started. Those three guys, you know, they may not get a statue, but they'll certainly be considered Arizona legends.
Yeah. I think it's something of an upset that Noah ended up in this position. When you just look at the landscape of quarterbacks in the Big 12, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this league. I mean, you've got Sawyer Robertson, who threw 31 touchdown passes, Josh Hoover of TCU, 29 TD passes. Brendan Sorsby had 27 touchdown passes and a bunch of rushing TDs. Rocco Becht, Jalen Daniels, Baron Morton, Devin Dampier, and somehow, some way, Noah Fifita rose to the top. I think his ability to take care of the football was a very big deal to me this year, and a great sign of improvement. He threw 12 interceptions a year ago, which was tied for the most in the league, and this year only 5. So he had 26-5 touchdown interception ratio. That's probably why the likes of Sawyer Robertson and Josh Hoover didn't earn those accolades, despite having far and away the most yards and most touchdowns of any quarterbacks. They had 12 and 13 interceptions,
yeah,
respectively. And then you flip it over to the other side, Arizona had a gazillion interceptions as a defense.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they took the ball away like no other. The number one pass defense in the Big 12.
Yep.
Still true.
Yep.
Even after the let me just double check. Yep. Yes. Even after the Big 12 championship game, Texas Tech, they're slipping. They're fourth in pass defense. Ouch. Ouch. Arizona far and away number one at 155.9 yards per game. Utah next at 177.5. Touchdown to interception ratio for Arizona opponents. 9 touchdowns, 19 picks. Wow. And the leaders of that gang.
Yeah.
Dalton Johnson and Traydon Stukes.
Yep. And Dalton had, let me look at my notes here, had a gazillion tackles in that home finale against Baylor.
Oh my gosh.
Dude. 18 tackles.
21? Was it 18? Okay, it was 18.
Yeah, but still like 18 tackles, which has not been done by Wildcats since Scooby Wright in 2014, which was literally or arguably the best defensive season in program history.
So you look at the tackle leaders in the Big 12, and he ranked 7th in that category. And I think every single guy who's in front of him is a linebacker.
Yeah, he's number one for DBs.
Yeah. So, well, go ahead and give us a little more about Traydon and Dalton, because I'm going to look up a stat here that people might question the bona fides of a safety making a bunch of tackles like that. But I'm going to look up something while you're
okay.
While you're talking
about them. Well, my favorite development about Dalton this year is that he's turned into a ball hawk, because he came into this year only with just one interception. And it's funny is I remember asking about that like a month and a half ago or 2 months ago. And it was right when he like got, you know, a couple of picks. And I was like, and I asked him like, you came into the season only with one pick, you know, and were you trying to put an emphasis on being a ball hawk? And you can kind of tell he was like, yeah, I should have more picks than I have right now. But, you know, that was an element to his game that he added. And he already had the forced fumble technique down. Like he could, you know, take the ball away by forcing fumbles. He had the Charles Tillman peanut punch down pat, but he wanted to develop his skills as a ball hawk. And lo and behold, he's got the second most interceptions this season in the Big 12 alongside his buddy, Tre'Davious Stoukes, who also has four interceptions this year. And then Javion Cole had a quiet, successful year for Arizona at cornerback. And he's a guy that they're going to get back next season, or at least that they're expected to return. You never know, but you know, he's going to come back next season and be another impressive piece. But yeah. And you know what, Lev, we talk about the interceptions and we talk about the takeaways. I didn't know this until like just this week that Arizona finished the season with more takeaways than touchdowns allowed. They had 28 takeaways and they had only allowed 25 touchdowns. I knew like they got on like a hot streak towards the end of the season. And we were, you know, looking at this 5-game winning streak, like, man, they've got more takeaways than touchdowns. And I was like, wait a second, let me look at the entire season. 28 takeaways, 25 touchdowns allowed. Just impressive stuff right there. And the heart and soul of that defense is those two guys that we just talked about in Tre'Davious Stoukes and Dalton Johnson.
Yeah, when Tre'Davious gets his hands on the ball, he almost always comes down with it. He has very good hands. The interception against ASU is an all-timer.
That's one of the best interceptions I've ever seen.
Like,
ever,
period, right? Just absolutely incredible. Mossed a receiver. It's usually the receiver who mosses the defensive back, but he did it on that play. Genesis Smith is the new guy that, you know, Danny G anyway. Danny Gonzalez makes fun of for not catching the ball as much as he should. Danny feels like Genesis should have more picks.
Which is crazy, Lev, because I swear to God.
In practice, camp, I know.
He was like head and shoulders above everybody in that category. Like if we were keeping stats, Genesis Smith had like 7 picks in training camp. And then the next closest was like 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, the heat of the moment, you know, there's genuine risk of being hit or there's a lot of traffic and stuff going on, but I'm sure it's something that he's going to work on and improve on. So I mentioned with Dalton, I wanted to look something up. So on PFF, Pro Football Focus, you can look up specific like run defense metrics, and you can look at the average depth of tackle. We've heard of the average depth of a throw, right? A dot. Average depth of target. This is average depth of tackle.
Interesting.
So I filtered it by safeties and with at least minimum of 224 run defense snaps. Dalton averaged 6.4 yards for his average depth of tackle on run plays. That's like middle of the pack for the Pac-12. But to give you some for the Big 12. To give you some perspective, though, like Carter Stoutmeyer of Colorado, his average depth of tackle on run plays was 14.9 yards. Teo Johnson of Utah, 10.5 yards. Tanner Wall of BYU, 10.3 yards. Like the difference between Dalton and Genesis, and Dalton was 6.4, Genesis was 6.5, was about 3.5 yards between them and the best safeties in the league. And, you know, every system is different. Guys are positioned in different places on the field. Like some defenses might have that strong safety as basically a linebacker, right? Depending on where they're aligned.
Yeah.
Arizona safeties play at depth, but the defense is geared towards safeties making a lot of tackles, right? It was originally created at New Mexico. Right, by Rocky Long, and the main defender, the guy who made almost all the plays for that team was Brian Urlacher, who of course went on to become a linebacker in the NFL, a very, very good one, Hall of Fame linebacker for the Chicago Bears. But yeah, sometimes tackles can be, you know, just sort of a stat that you accumulate, right, and don't have a lot of meaning. But I think in the case of Dalton Johnson, it is a really meaningful statistic.
And, you know, if things go according to plan in this Holiday Bowl, which I think it will, he's going to be the first Arizona defensive back since Darryl Brooks in 2004 and 2005 to lead Arizona in tackles in back-to-back seasons.
Is anyone close to him on the team who could pass him?
I don't think so. Well, because Tay Brown's number two. So, like, unless, like, Tay Brown just goes berserk and Dalton Johnson has a quiet game, which I don't envision happening – Maybe that could happen, but I like I said, I think Tate Brown would literally need to have like a career day in order for that to happen. I think Dalton Johnson's pretty comfortable finishing off the season as the leader in the clubhouse for tackles.
Yeah. So,
with that being said,
yeah.
No, I was going to say, Lev, did you put them on your AP all Big 12 team?
Yeah, I certainly did. I voted Noah, Dalton, and Traden to the first team. There's a panel of how many of us are on this panel, Justin? Maybe like 15, yeah, 20, something like that.
Like somewhere between a dozen and 20.
Yeah, so we're both voters, and I don't know what your methodology is for doing this, but I dive pretty deep into a lot of the PFF stuff and try to compare stats. I had Noah on the first team. I had Traden and Dalton on the first team. Then we do a second team. And I had one Arizona player on the second team, and that would be Deshaun McKnight.
Oh,
yeah. And the reason I did that is because he had just an exceptional number of tackles for loss for a defensive tackle. I think like maybe the most for an interior defensive lineman in the league, or at least among the leaders. So that was the reason that I gave. Yeah, Deshaun had tackles for loss, total tackles for loss. He had 11 tackles for loss this season. That was tied for eighth in the league. And almost everyone else is like an edge rusher of some sort, whether it's a defensive end or a linebacker who's like 11 and above. So that was the other one that I gave the nod to for second team. Did you have any, but how did you do it?
So I had Noah on there. Noah was the first team quarterback, and I also picked him as offensive player of the year.
Same.
And then I put Dalton Johnson and Traden Stukes. I put Dalton as a safety, Traden as a cornerback.
Yep.
And then for second team, I put a Wildcat on there. But I put Genesis Smith on there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Genesis Smith was the guy that I put on the second team. So I had three Wildcats on there. I'm curious though, for Coach of the Year, did you pick Brent Brennan or did you pick Kalani Sitake?
Yes. Well, first of all, in case people didn't see it, the official Big 12 offensive player of the year was LJ Martin, the running back from BYU, who I had in my top three for the award. I had Noah, I had LJ, and I had Cameron Dickey for Texas Tech running back. And I was kind of like, hey, if one of these running backs has an amazing game in the Big 12 championship, I was going to elevate them over Noah, but none of them really did. So I gave Noah the nod there. Coach of the year. The winner per Big 12 coaches who vote on these things was Kalani Sitake of BYU. This is before they finalize this before the Big 12 championship game. I had two finalists. One was Kalani Sitake and the other one was Brent Brennan. Brent, was in there because in my view, he kind of did the most with the least. There was no official preseason Big 12 poll, but if you looked around to find ones that were done, Arizona was generally picked somewhere in the 14, 15, 16 range, right? Like at the very bottom of the league. And he led them to a 9-3 season, including a 6-3 record in the conference. However, at the end of the day, I decided to go with Kalani Sitake. And the reasoning was twofold. One, what he was able to do with a true freshman quarterback after losing his quarterback in the offseason, Jake Retzlaff. I think when that happened, like everybody thought BYU was cooked, right? They are just not going to have the season that everyone thought they were going to have. And then the other thing was he won the head-to-head against Brent Brennan here in Tucson. So it was very close. I strongly considered it, but I ended up going with Kalani.
Yeah, and the whole quarterback situation, in my opinion, is really what allowed Kalani Sitake to get this award. Because, I mean, we thought, man, Bear Bachmeyer, freshman quarterback, like, good luck, BYU. And here they are on the cusp of going to the college football playoff. And I felt like they were kind of disrespected on Selection Sunday. You know, Kalani Sitake said after the Big 12 championship, like, can you at least just put us on the graphic? Can you at least just make it feel like that you're considering us? And like ESPN never uttered the words BYU. I didn't hear them.
Here, course, I think that they were more deserving last year honestly, because SMU ended up going and they beat SMU head to head at SMU.
Yeah.
During the season. And I think had the same number of losses or very close to it at the end of the year. And they, again, were not really given any serious consideration. But can you imagine if Noah Fifita, God forbid, had suffered a season ending injury in August? Like, would Arizona have been 9-3? Right. Yeah. I'm guessing probably not.
No.
Right. And that's essentially what happened to BYU. They were fortunate that they were able to get this guy, Bear Bachmeyer, who, you know, transferred from Stanford after they had a coaching change. And he turned out to be a very effective dual threat player, very good supporting cast, of course, as well. But that was kind of the lens that I looked at it through.
Yeah.
You know, so dude, yeah, who did you vote for?
Brent Brennan. Okay. Brent Brennan, because and honestly, like, I was like you, Lev, I was kicking back and forth between Kalani Sitake and Brent Brennan. And how I feel about this is, like, me picking Brent Brennan is not because Kalani Sitake doesn't deserve it. Like, I think he totally deserves the 12 coach of the year. With everything that BYU went through this year, the whole quarterback transition, like, I have no qualms with Kalani Sitake getting Big 12 player of the year, coach of the year. But I look at, you know, if there was a Big 12 preseason media poll, Arizona probably 14th on that list.
That's what I'm saying. Right? Yeah, 14, 15, or 16.
Yeah. And so considering that, I looked at Arizona and I'm like, yeah, I think Brent Brennan. And also, I also thought about the decisions that Brent Brennan had to make in the offseason. Right, getting the right coordinators in place. I know that Danny G and Seth Dagey, they're getting their flowers and they're getting a lot of love. But, you know, the decisions to get those guys, to put them in that position, to get Big Joe Salavea to come back home and be at Arizona. You know, this is an award for Brent Brennan that I think is that lasts more than just you know, the season. I think that this is an award that goes into the offseason. And that's why I picked Brent Brennan as the Big 12 Coach of the Year. The work that they did in the offseason, and now that it's all coming to fruition this year and, you know, having a chance to make history, I got Brent Brennan as my Coach of the Year.
I also thought about Willie Fritz. If you apply the head-to-head logic, then Willie should have been over Brent Brennan in my rankings. However, Houston was in a position where they easily could have been in the Big 12 championship game. They lost at home to West Virginia as a big favorite, and then they lost at home to TCU. So I felt like that kind of took the luster off of their season a little bit. They did end up with the same exact record as Arizona, and I ranked them ahead of Arizona in the AP poll for that reason. Same record, head-to-head victory. Even though Arizona is probably playing better at the end of the year. But that's the reason that I had Willie number three in my pecking order for Coach of the Year.
As far as the other awards, Lev, you and I are aligned.
Yeah, okay. Defensive
Player of the Year, Jacob Rodriguez from Texas Tech.
No-brainer.
Who I think should get love for the Heisman. And we'll talk about that once the winner is announced. Quick,
like, they announced the four finalists. Right. And the four finalists are Diego Pavia, quarterback from Vanderbilt, Fernando Mendoza, quarterback from Indiana, Julian Sayin, quarterback from Ohio State, and Jeremiah Love, running back from Notre Dame. We are not allowed to reveal what our picks for the Heisman were before the announcement is made. So we can't say. But what I will say is that I had a Final Four. And Julian Sayin was not in my Final Four.
Okay. Are we allowed to say if a guy we voted for is not in New York?
I think so.
I'm not gonna say who I voted for.
Yeah, there was someone on my ballot who's not in New York. Yes.
Same.
That is accurate.
Yep. And he is one of the guys that we just talked about. A man who has a mustache in Lubbock, Texas. And that's all I will say about that. I think he should get love for the Heisman. And when they show the final results, I have a funny feeling we're going to see Jacob Rodriguez, like,
yeah, he should number five at least or number six. Get some votes, right? I wish I wish that you could, it was like you could vote for five players.
Yeah.
And that they would take five players to New York every time.
Yeah.
I think that would be more, that would be more fun. It would get more players involved, more regions of the country. Like the Big 12 is doing this thing now where each week, and not only do they name like the, you know, the player of the week in basketball or the freshman of the week, they have the starting five, right? They give like a whole lineup of players in both men's and women's. And I like that idea because it just gets more names out there. You're recognizing more people. But
Bear Bachmeyer, freshman of the year.
Yep.
David Bailey, transfer of the year.
Yep.
Easy peasy. Okay. All right, Lev. Well, I guess before we kind of wrap things up, talking about the Holiday Bowl, because we're going to have more podcasts and content leading up to the bowl games. So this ain't the only podcast you'll get for the rest of the year. We'll have plenty more on the way, but I think it's a good time to answer some mailbag questions.
Yeah, I have a couple of pretty good ones. One was sent from our loyal listener and friend John Vieter.
Yes, sir.
And all right, so he wanted to know, you know, in light of the college football playoff situation, okay, says looks like there may be some criteria changes made to the college football playoff ranking / selection process. Would a straight selection of the top 12 ranked teams be a benefit or a penalty to the Big 12? I am going to say that would be a penalty.
Penalty.
To the Big 12 most of the time, because the Big 12 just doesn't get the respect that the SEC and the Big 10 get. And it is possible that the Big 12 champion could be ranked 13th. In a given year, right? I mean, there's a lot of parity in the league most years, at least we think that will be the case. This way, at least there's something of a guarantee. Like obviously it didn't work out for the ACC this year because of their, you know, antiquated tiebreaker system. But I would not be an advocate of that if I'm the Big 12, because then you're assuming/hoping that one of your teams is ranked in the top 12, and there's no guarantee that that will happen.
No. And we kind of saw that with BYU, because I'm thinking, you know, because they were number 11, right, in the Big 12 championship game, and they lost to the number 4 seeded team or the number 4 ranked team in college football twice in the state of Texas. And their two losses were to Texas Tech in the state of Texas, and yet they were penalized way more than Alabama losing to Georgia. I mean, they got absolutely killed by Georgia in that SEC championship. And, you know, what's funny is people were saying like, well, yeah, they played against Georgia in Atlanta, not necessarily a neutral site game. And I'm like, I know BYU travels well, but that wasn't necessarily a neutral site game for BYU in Arlington, Texas. Like, I mean, the Big 12 set an attendance record because the team from Texas was right there in the Big 12 championship game. So, I just think that BYU, they got penalized more so than Alabama. And it goes to show, like you said, Lev, like the Big 12 just doesn't really get any respect. So I thought maybe it could be a benefit, but now that I think about it, no, I think you're right. I think it will be a penalty.
Yeah, and I have one more here. That first one, by the way, came via Threads. And the second one came via email. And this is from Huck Kwan, who is one of our listeners. He says, hello, it's never too early to look ahead. It would be great if you and Spears could go position by position and project potential returning starters. I love a project like this.
Crystal ball.
Let's start with this. Like, we are recording this on Tuesday, December 9th. There has been one Arizona player who's known to have entered the transfer portal at this point, and that is offensive lineman Michael Wooten. You never know with the portal. I never want to assume anything about anyone. So take all of this with something of a grain of salt as we go through position by position. But obviously, starting a quarterback, Noah Fifita is expected to return for his fifth and final season. And the competition there would be between Sawyer Anderson.
I made the same mistake.
Sawyer Anderson, who'll be a redshirt freshman next year, and then incoming freshman Oscar Rios. Major duel for that number two spot. But that one seems pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah, it's Noah Fifita, and then whoever's the backup, whether it's Braden Locke, if he decides to come back another season, Oscar Rios, Sawyer Anderson. But, you know, Braden could also be kind of in a similar position as Michael Wooten, where he's like, okay, I've done the backup thing at Arizona. Yeah. I'm ready to get my shine. I'm ready to play some more. And then let me look at, you know, some other landing spots, even if it's not the sexy power four level, like a place like Arizona.
Yeah. If Braden Locke wants to play, that's the option that he's going to have to pursue. And I think at this point that Arizona would probably give their blessing, right? Totally. For him Absolutely. To do that. Whereas I think they were a little worried, you know, that he might re-enter the portal in the spring this past year. And with a totally, there was no other proven option on the roster at that point. Like Sawyer Anderson had, you know, never taken a snap in college football before. Yeah. So that was a concern. At running back, the only guy that they are definitely losing is Ismail Mahdi.
Yeah.
So you've got two veterans in Kedrick Reasonneau and Quincy Craig coming back, kind of co-starters-ish, right? I mean, maybe Ked is the starter and Quincy's the third down back. And you also have Wesley Yarbrough and Corn Warren slated to return, right? Again, assuming nobody enters the portal. So, yeah. Man, that's like four productive / promising players on top of like a pretty good running back who's coming in the 26 recruiting class.
Oh, Brandon Smith. Man, I watched the highlights of this kid. Not only is this kid fast, and he's also track speed. They value track runners. Like they want those kind of athletes that are, coming to Arizona. And Guy Scicroli, the general manager, said something that I will never forget. And he said, what do you say? Fast guys don't run slow. That's right. Something like yeah. that. Like fast guys don't run slow. And then he said, you know, if they're fast in high school, then they're going to be fast in college.
And they're like, they have to be fast in high school.
Yeah.
Right. They don't suddenly become fast.
Yeah. So yeah. they look for the speedsters. They know how to identify the talent. And this guy, Brandon Smith from the Bay Area that they have coming in from Fresno, he's a big time running back. And yeah, so they it's a very crowded running back room, but you know, as we've seen in the past, you can never have too many of those guys, right? Because you know, those guys get banged up, the tread on the tires, you know, it wears out as the season progresses. Mm-hmm. And you need a healthy stable of guys. They've been, fortunately for them, they've been somewhat healthy. I know Ked Reasonneau missed a few games this year, but like, and Quincy, you know, he also has his little thing that, you know, made him limited for a couple of games. But I think for the most part, that running back room has been very healthy. And I think next year they're going to be loaded at that spot. And then receiver next year.
Yeah, I was going to say, this team at the skill positions is looking really good. At wide receiver, they lose Javon Watley, Chris Hudson, and Luke Wysong. But they are slated to return Trace Bivey, Chris Hunter, Gio Richardson, and Isaiah Mizell. Like, your three starters are probably coming from that group of four, assuming they all come back. And then you add RJ Mosley, who's their top ranked recruit, to that mix. Another like guy who's built like Spivey, you know, 6'4", and can move. So that's a really nice nucleus of wide receivers to me.
Yeah. And I mean, Gio Richardson has looked very promising as a freshman. As a matter of fact, he's got the most receiving yards by a true freshman since a guy by the name of Tetero McMillan in 2022.
I've heard of him.
Yep. So, Gio Richardson, you know, I'm not expecting him to be the next Tetaroa McMillan, but I do expect him to be the next very productive wide receiver at Arizona. And the one thing that has really impressed the coaches, and you can certainly see it on film, is that he's a very smart player. Like, he just has a really high football IQ. He's very patient as a runner, very tough, very competitive, not afraid to take the hits. So,
he's a
true freshman, but man, he is like a guy that I think could be the next one of the next greats. And, you know, Lev, we talked to him before, his cadence and just kind of how he is. And he's very much like Bobby Wade. And I've joked around about that too with Bobby. I'm like, dude, that is like,
that's your mini me.
That is your mini me.
Yes. Very promising freshman season for, he's just very smooth, like a natural out in the football field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when he gets the ball in his hands, he just seems to know what to do with it. And he's improved too over the course of the season. He was having trouble with like contested catches early on and has done a much better job in that area. Tight end requires a little bit more projection. You're losing Cameron Barmore, who's really kind of taken over as the main guy down the stretch of the season, and Sam Olson. They're both redshirt seniors. So the candidates to start, Tyler Powell would be one, who suffered a season-ending leg injury on the first offensive snap of the season.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's got to come back from his injury. Kellen Ford, who was a freshman this year, also suffered a season-ending injury in the preseason. And then the other guy that I think is probably under consideration is the incoming freshman Henry Gabalis.
Gabalis, I think.
Who has garnered a lot of praise. It's like a very versatile athlete. Maybe he's a, you know, maybe he could be a Brock Bowers type of guy. Maybe a little untraditional as far as what you think about. Like, I don't think he's not like 6'5", 250, right? He's a little bit smaller than that, but moves really well. So I said a little more projection at the tight end position. And when I think about it, I wonder if they might want to bring in a veteran of some sort from the portal just to have one more body.
Yeah.
At that spot.
They've already offered a tight end.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. They offered a tight end from a lower level school. So kind of like the Cameron Barmore route. And Gabalis is kind of like Cameron Barmore, because Barmore was a receiver when he played at Mercyhurst that transitioned over to tight end. So those are the kind of players that Josh Miller targets. And I mean, you could see the development of Cameron Barmore. You know, it's hard to make that transition from receiver to tight end, but Cam Barmore realized if he wanted to play in the NFL, that's the transition that he's going to have to make. And he took his lumps along the way. Like, he was kind of MIA in the spring, and it got to a point where we were like, okay, Cam Barmore might not play. And then all of a sudden, and you know, he, you know, steps up in training camp, you know, as you know, a guy that could be, you know, one of the backup options. And then as the season progressed, you started to see the light turn on for him. And I think you're going to see something similar down the road with guys like Henry Gabalis, who's kind of more like his type. And then Kellen Ford, you know, I've seen him in person as a freshman. He looks like he could play college football right now. So maybe taking those mental reps this year, learning from Sam Olson and Cam Barmore, and then if he gets in that full year in that weight room, in that strength program with Colin Carroll, maybe this is a guy that could break out for next season. But yeah, I totally agree with you, Lev. I think right now tight end is all projection. I think they have a very high ceiling, but then again, you know, the top guys that we're talking about, they're coming off of injury. How are they going to look like when they're fully recovered?
Yes. And I was wrong about Henry Gabalis's height. He's 6'6", according to his listing anyway, by the U of A, and 215 pounds. So obviously has to put on a lot of weight, which is not unusual. Oscar Rios has to put on a lot of weight too, by the way. He is like way too skinny to play college football right now, but that's how it goes, right? That's what these guys are often like that when they come in, and then they put on weight and they get bigger and stronger, and they kind of go from, you know, from being boys to young men. All right. Offensive line. They are losing a lot here. You're losing both of your tackles who've been the starters for most of the season, Ty Buchanan and Tristan Bounds. They're losing their center, Kiana DeCambra.
Yeah.
And they're losing their left guard, Chuba Ma'ai. But the cupboard is not bare. You've got a potentially Rhino Tapatotai coming back, who really struggled with lateral movement coming off of that ACL. You know, I thought when we watched him like running and moving around in training camp, like, God, this guy's going to be totally fine. But he was running in a straight line.
Yeah.
You know, it's the side to side movement that's difficult when you're coming off that injury. So you know, potential starter at right tackle if he's able to get over that and recover. You've got Alexander Deust coming back as the starting right guard. And you also have Matthew Lotto, who's been one of the like pleasant surprises of the late part of the season, stepping in just seamlessly at both left tackle and right tackle. Seems like he might be a guy. Jordan Brown, the transfer from Georgia Tech, is possible that they're going to get an injury waiver for him, which would be, he'd be another possibility in there. And then there's the whole freshman class from last year. Someone like a Lewis Akpa, conceivably could move up. But what do you think about the offensive line outlook?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there, and they're going to lose some guys. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, you can also tap into the transfer portal once again and find a similar story like a Ty Buchanan or a Tristan Bounds, right? You look at tackles that were at the big time schools that just did not work out, right? Tristan Bounds was kind of in that Bill Norton situation where he was playing at a really good school that were winning national championships, and they're one of the best in college football, but he just did not get his shine. And he wanted to finally get that opportunity in his last season of playing college football. And, you know, big shout out to him. He finished that degree, Tristan Bounds, at Michigan while he was going to Arizona.
Yep.
So he became a Michigan man while he was practicing in the spring.
And enrolled at Arizona.
He
was dual enrolled.
So he was like taking like
the true dual threat.
He was taking like 20 credits between Arizona and Michigan, but he did not play hardly any at Michigan, comes to Arizona, is great at right tackle, struggled early on, but then figured it out and became a very productive right tackle. And then Ty Buchanan, the plant-powered left tackle, the vegetarian, which is crazy to me considering he's from Texas. Like, you're in the barbecue capital of the world and you're a vegetarian offensive lineman. But, you know, he was a solid piece at left tackle. They can go out and find those guys because they've got their pick of the litter. Now, I know that the recruiting calendar has changed with this one transfer portal window coming up, right? It's not the way it used to be. But, you know, this is the window, or this is the opportunity for you to really see some quality offensive linemen. Now, they're probably not going to get the best of the best, the cream of the crop, because those guys are going to teams that are in the CFP consistently. They're going to the teams that are going to give them the most amount of money. But a Tristan Bounds, a Ty Buchanan, they are out there. You just got to go out and look for them. And I think, you know, the job that Josh Oglesby has done in the last year with developing guys like Matthew Lotto and getting kind of DeCambra to slide in over at center and moving Chuba Ma'ai to left guard and having him thrive there, like all of the adjustments and things that Josh Oglesby did, it has worked for Arizona's offensive line. And so I feel very good that Josh Oglesby, while he does have some work to do as far as placement and figuring out where these guys are going to fit in this puzzle, I feel very good that he's going to make the smart decision.
All right, defensive line. They are going to lose Tia Savea and Deshaun McKnight. So those are they've been your starting defensive tackles for most of the season. And they are also going to lose Malachi Bailey, who has filled in for Trey Smith at defensive end and has had some moments this year. But you're returning Leroy Palu at defensive tackle. He's got one more year, a very solid season. Trey Smith, from everything we've heard, is going to get another year after suffering an injury early this season. So that is a big time guy to be getting back at defensive end. Those are kind of like the sure things along the defensive line as we project into next year. And there's some possibilities of some other guys stepping up and emerging, but those are kind of the anchors.
Yeah. And Trey Smith, I think, is going to be the trade on Stooks of next year.
Nice.
He's going to come back next year, have a boatload of sacks, right? Trey on Stooks got a bunch of interceptions this year, and that's what helped him get into that all Big 12 first team. I think you're going to see the defensive line version of Trayden Stooks with Trey Smith. He's going to be a really good edge rusher in year two under Joe Salavea and just become just a bona fide NFL dude. And he's going to be one of Arizona's leaders on defense. And then I'm curious to see some of the other younger guys who we haven't seen this year, like Edowa Okunde?
Well, there's one that we did see that I should have probably mentioned. That's Mays Pace, right?
Yeah.
Who played a ton as a true freshman, and he's listed at 6'3", 271. Played inside and outside. He'll probably get bigger. He, you know, he probably projects as a defensive tackle, but if he continues on his current trajectory, he's going to be a starter.
Absolutely.
On that unit next year, right? Zach Siulepa, the project from New Zealand, who weighs about 400 pounds, and they would like him to get down to about 350, but very large and athletic.
Project New Zealand.
Right?
This is that's Zach Siulepa.
Right? So that's another one. You mentioned Edowa Okunde, who suffered a hand injury, I think, in training camp, and that really kind of stifled his progress. Ezra Funa is another one. He was a pretty highly touted junior college transfer because of academic issues, wasn't able to play this year, but he was on the roster. He's been around. He's someone who's very highly thought of as well along that defensive line. So that's, again, like pretty promising nucleus, especially at a position where Arizona has struggled to find guys over the years.
I think one guy, he's going to be kind of like the Malachi Bailey / Leroy Palu of it, is Kevin Moore, a guy that they added in that 26 recruiting class from Hutchinson Community College. They've done really well recruiting JUCO guys and guys from, you know, FCS schools. And they love this guy who's like 6'4", 277 pounds, already developed as a player. You put him into the mix. Who knows what he played at Hutchinson, and Hutchinson's a really good school in Kansas. So I trust Joe Salavea. He has not proven me otherwise that we should not trust him. So yeah, we'll see. One full year with Joe Salavea, I'm really curious to see how those guys look going into next season.
For sure. So Chase Kennedy, I would say he's either linebacker, an edge rusher or a linebacker, depending on how you define it, probably more of a linebacker. So we will say that he is a returning quote-unquote starter at linebacker. He didn't always start, but he played a lot. He's important. Tay Brown is back for his senior year as the centerpiece of that group. And then, you know, you lose Max Harris. Kind of penciled in Myron Robinson for that position, but Myron suffered a knee injury against Cincinnati. It's going to be a long road to recovery for him. Kind of puts, you know, things a little bit in doubt as he recovers from that. So you're looking at Jabari Mann as a possibility for that other spot. And I think this is a position, because of Myron's injury, where they're going to go get a veteran of some sort, so they have a little bit more depth at that spot. It would be great to find like the next Riley Wilson, who's out of eligibility, unfortunately, but someone who could play inside and out, athletic, rush the passer. You know, everybody wants those, of course. So, you know, easier said than done.
When, and the coaches have said the line between FCS and FBS, it's starting to get blurred a little bit. Like, you can go into that FCS well and really pull out some really good talent. I mean, not just Arizona, but look at Washington. Jed Fish went and got a safety from NAU who's killing it this year for the Huskies. So there's some good talent there. You can find those guys at the FCS level. You know, if you want to get a veteran, go look in the Dakotas. I'm sure one of the Dakota schools, they got a guy that could contribute at some point. So yeah, I think linebacker's in a really good spot.
We were talking to, real quick aside, we were talking to Matt Entz, who is the head coach of Fresno State. Fresno State is playing in the Arizona Bowl upcoming against Miami of Ohio. And Matt Entz was the coach at North Dakota State. And I asked him, you know, how he developed how being an FCS helped him develop an eye for talent. I said, you know, turning 2- and 3-star players into 4- and 5-star production. And he was like, well, like, thank you for assuming that we were getting 2- and 3-star players. You know, he's like, we were getting 0- and 1-star players and turning them into NFL guys in certain cases. So, those guys have a real eye for talent, and it seems like Arizona's front office does as well.
Absolutely.
Which is essential in this time. All right. Defensive backs. We assume Genesis Smith is going to be back. He's flirted with leaving in the past. We don't know what that's. He could try for the NFL. He's a third year junior. But let's just assume, for argument's sake, that he's back at that free safety spot. You're losing Dalton Johnson and Trayden Stukes. The other starting, you know, safety and nickel, you're losing two really good corners in Michael Dansby and Aiden Garnes. But as you mentioned, bringing back Javion Cole at cornerback, you're bringing back Marquise Groves-Killebrew in theory, someone who has been in the portal a couple times, but in theory, he's back at corner. And I think a guy to keep an eye on for a potential starting safety job next year is Coleman Patman, who is a freshman this year, someone that they really like a lot. I'm not totally sure. Oh, and then the other guy is probably Gavin Hunter.
Yeah.
Who played at the nickel position before Trayden came back. And then Gavin was basically reduced to special teams after that because Trayden's just, he's just too good.
Yeah.
To keep off the field. So you might, that mean maybe that's your starting five right there.
I think so. And I think that at the nickel spot, you might see like a 1-2 combination of Gavin Hunter and maybe Jashaun Frost-O-Ramos, who's coming back from injury. We'll see what his future holds. Or, I mean, they've got some really good DBs that are freshmen right now. And Suede Griffin from the Austin area, the son of Eric Griffin, who played for Dwayne Dequina at Texas. That's another guy that they are very high on and had a really productive training camp. And who knows, maybe he competes with Gavin Hunter for that starting spot. I mean, you never know what kind of jump a guy like that will make from year one to year two. But I feel confident Gavin Hunter, I mean, he was so productive in the time that he stepped in for Trayden Stukes. Like, he was, like, making plays. He wasn't just a guy that was just a placeholder that was there filling a gap and, you know, just there while Trayden was recovering. He was actually making plays. And so I think learning from Trayden this year, I think it sets him up nicely for next year.
Yeah, one freshman to keep an eye on, or incoming freshman, I should say, for the secondary is, and I don't know how to pronounce his first name, so probably going to butcher it, but Zaire Hyler from Denton, Texas, who's listed at 6'4", and seems, again, like a really good athlete. I think he's another guy with a track.
Texas Takario.
Background. Yeah, Texas Takario. Nice. I like it. So, yeah, that's another one at least to keep an eye on. And they'll probably add, I would guess they're going to add a corner from the portal to fill out that room a little bit. That's another position where I feel like they could do that. Another position where they might add someone from the portal is the specialists. This is the last ones for us to cover here. Michael Salgado Medina, very up and down sophomore season as a place kicker. I don't think they're going to give up on him. I really don't. I think they believe in his talent. We talked on last week's pod about how kickers can improve over time. And he has made some 50 plus yarders. Like, he's got a lot of ability. He just needs more consistency. They're going to need a new holder. Ian Wagner, this is his last year of eligibility. So holder, kickoff specialist, punter, Isaac Lovison, also out of eligibility. So I think they'll be looking to add something to that room, maybe a couple guys even.
Yeah, they'll be looking to add some guys. They also have Tyler Perjune as well.
That's right. Yep.
Freshman kicker. Who knows? Maybe, you know, he can, handle the kickoff duties and learn from Michael Salgado Medina, or maybe he competes with Michael Salgado Medina because, you know, MSM, he had to really earn that job this training camp. It wasn't just given to him. So maybe there's another kicking competition this summer, but they believe in Money Mike. And I think, you know, he'll be your kicker next year. But yeah, specialist, that's going to be very interesting. And then you also got to replace Luke Weissong as a returner. Jabba Watley is also a returner as well. Ismail Mahdi. So they'll be looking at some guys that are going to be returning as well. So yeah, lots of movement this offseason.
But less than last year.
Way less than last year.
Thank goodness for Justin's health and well-being. So there you go, Huck. We just went over the whole lineup for you, from quarterback all the way to specialists. So, boom, there you go. And that's, of course, all could be moot in a week from now if a bunch of guys surprisingly enter the portal. So stay tuned for more. But do you have any mailbag questions for us, Justin?
Yeah, so this one comes in from Puck Hansen, and he asks, will U of A be practicing at Southwestern College, SDSU, or some other facility? Would there be any meet the player events in San Diego? If so, what are the dates? Will the team be attending the San Diego Zoo? If so, when? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to any of those.
They will practice somewhere out there. We just don't know where.
We don't know where.
They probably will go to the zoo, but we don't know when. So check back. Check back with us. We'll have a little more. We'll have more answers probably a week from now.
I was going to say, that's a question that's definitely closer to the holidays than right now. Okay, this one comes in from Noj Narak. And they ask, I know it isn't public information, but do you have any idea what the total NIL budget is for the football team? How it compares to other similar programs, and maybe some examples of what individual players like Fifita are rumored to receive? And another question where it's like, I don't know, because they don't reveal those kind of numbers. And it's almost like a big game of poker. You don't want to show your hand. You want to keep your cards close to your chest, because then it's almost like you're showing the other Big 12 schools your hand. And then these other Big 12 schools, when it comes to recruiting talent, they're like, hey, I know what Arizona, I know what their budget is. They don't got our budget. Come play for us. Right. And the only school that seems to be okay with them kind of waving their dollars around is Texas Tech, but that's just because they've got billionaire oil money. So it's like, unless you are one of the riches, you ain't showing your money. Unfortunately for Arizona, they are not considered one of the riches of college football. And therefore, they're just going to keep all their finances and everything kind of hush hush.
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction too, that NIL and revenue sharing are two separate pools of money. Revenue sharing is new. The House agreement gave each school the ability to spend up to $20.5 million in revenue sharing to disperse among their athletes how they see fit. I think most schools are giving football like probably somewhere between 60 and 80% of that. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Arizona's giving 15 million out of the 20.5. It could be 12 million, but let's just say that it is 15 million. And let's say you've got 100 players that you want to pay. So the average salary, quote unquote, or revenue sharing for those players would be $150,000.
Yeah.
Right. And that's for your pretty much your whole roster. But it's going to be different for quarterbacks versus backup offensive linemen. It's going to be different for established seniors versus incoming freshmen, et cetera. But that's the pool of money that's available in revenue sharing. As far as NIL, I don't have that information either. I mean, we've talked to people off the record, behind the scenes. The indication that we've gotten is that they're probably in the lower half of the league, maybe even the lower quarter of the league in that regard. But there's always, people are always coming up with different ways to generate that money. There's a story that came out that Utah is launching some sort of corporation or something to raise revenue for their athletic programs. And Michigan State just got a $400 million gift. I don't know what they're going to do with that $400 million, but I imagine some of it is going to go to somehow paying players through NIL. So certainly something to keep an eye on. I it's probably more important than I want to admit. It's not something that I think about a lot or really enjoy writing about, but it definitely matters.
Yep.
In this world.
Absolutely. As far as like NIL deals and, you know, what someone like Noah Fifita is receiving, I don't know how much they're receiving, but I know what companies they're working for. Raising Cane's, baby. And Tucson
Airport, right?
Yeah, Tucson International Airport. All right.
Wouldn't it be funny if you just went to the airport and Noah was sitting there, like, which he very well could do, you know?
Yeah.
Didn't he and Tetaroa have a, like a deal with a private airline last year?
Yeah. It was like a Lear private jets or something like that.
So Noah, he got a flight coach now. The T-Mac not here. Is that how it works?
One of us, Noah. One of us. Ain't no more. Ain't no more being the, as Ric Flair called it, the jet flying son of a gun. All right. The last one, Lev. This one comes in from AZ to FLA. I'm assuming that means AZ to Florida. They ask, you need to find an interview Bobby Waters. I'm working on it, man. Working on it. Bobby Waters played quarterback at SMU and Arizona. And, you know, we call it the Adia Barnes Bowl because it's Arizona versus SMU, which is where she coaches now. the former Arizona women's basketball head coach who's now at SMU, and the games in San Diego. So it's really the Adia Barnes Bowl. But if you want to do the football connection, Bobby Waters, we'll work on getting Mr. Waters for the podcast.
Do you know anything about him? Like
nothing
currently, like whether he's even alive, like
he is alive.
Okay.
I think, I don't know what he does for a living now, but he played in the late 80s. Okay. And played at both SMU and Arizona, started at SMU, finished at Arizona.
And he was a quarterback.
And he was a quarterback. And he played under Dick Tomey in the early years of his time at Arizona. So we're working on contacting Mr. Bobby Waters, but that's not the question. This one comes in for Patrick Miller.
Okay.
And Patrick Miller says, maybe you guys can discuss changes that might make sense when it comes to selecting teams for the CFP. So we kind of already addressed it a little bit, but yeah, I mean, I think 16, just add four more teams, make it more aligned with the NFL playoffs, I guess. And I just feel like 16 is a very round number, and then you can still maintain the bowl system and whatnot. But I feel like no matter what, Lev, there's always going to be a team that complains. Like it feels like there's not going to be enough teams for the CFP. However, I do think that, you know, this whole situation with Notre Dame, mm-hmm. and also you can also make the case with teams like Texas. This
and
is
Vanderbilt. Yep.
And Vanderbilt. Well, I mean, Vanderbilt, they've always been really in an SEC team, but I'm saying like Texas wanted to be in the SEC. They went from the Big 12 mm-hmm. to the SEC because they wanted to be in the heavy hitters of college football. Notre Dame, they just wanted just to do their own thing as an independent program. And I feel like the decisions of both of those schools is what cost them going into the college football playoff. So you can't sit there and shake your fist like, oh, why don't they give us respect? And it's like, you guys chose this life. Now you got to deal with the consequences of your own actions. Like you wanted to be in the SEC, Texas. Well, don't lose three games. Lose two or one or get to the SEC championship and you won't be having this conversation. And then Notre Dame, join a conference, man. And then you know what? What's crazy, Lev, is Marcus Freeman. I have a lot of respect for him as a coach. I think he's a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a little bit of respect for him and Notre Dame for how they handled that. And I know that, you know, people think, oh, they're sending a message and, you know, well, why should they go to the Pop-Tarts Bowl or another bowl game where ESPN, the entity that screwed them, is just going to make money off of them. And I'm like, you guys are thinking about this from the wrong perspective. Think about the guys on Notre Dame that are not going to play in the NFL, and they're going into this week like, damn, I just played my last game and I had no idea about it. Like, I feel bad for those guys more so than the guys that are going to go on and play in the NFL. So I think Notre Dame handled it poorly. I think that Alabama should have been penalized more. Like, I just think that the CFP committee, they made some very questionable moves, and I'm really not sure what the plan is moving forward.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, the way that it turned out this year was terrible, flat out terrible. The ACC's out-of-date tiebreaker led to the wrong team playing Virginia in the championship game. It should have been Miami. Every league needs to adopt some sort of like highest in the rankings tiebreaker, right? If Miami faces Virginia, winner of that game gets in. Miami can't complain if they lose to Virginia. And that bumps James Madison. Notre Dame gets in and everybody's happy, basically, right? So that is streamlining or updating the tiebreakers, I think, is super important. Number one. Number two, we are probably headed towards 16 sooner or later, whether we like it or not. I personally thought 8 would have been a better number. You know, you go from going from 4 to 12. I mean, 8, you could have had the 5, you know, conference champions, one group of 5, 2 at large. You know, that would have been very heated. A lot of arguments. I don't think arguments are necessarily a bad thing. No. They're like, they are an inherent trait of college football. It's like no sport has arguments like college football, right? It's not even close. And it's one of the things that we like about it, right? Like it's so ridiculous and everybody gets so mad about everything. That's what makes it great. The other thing they're going to have to figure out is like, what do we do with these conference championship games? Because it's beneficial on some level to not play in them. If BYU didn't play and lose again, they're probably in, right?
Get the Miami treatment, yeah.
Oklahoma and Ole Miss and Texas A&M are sitting over there on the sidelines, not playing, resting up, while Alabama and Georgia are beating the crap out of each other. To what end? Right?
Yeah.
Like, Alabama had no punishment whatsoever for losing lopsidedly to Georgia in that game. So they're going to have to figure something out. I do not like the idea of, like, the Big Ten has floated about, like, 20 to 24 teams with all these, like, play-in games and all. It's just, I hate the idea of diminishing the regular season, because college football has the best regular season. Like, every loss feels like, even with the expanded playoff, every loss feels super meaningful, and I don't want to lose that.
Yep. All right. Well, that is it for our mailbag portion of the podcast. And I think that is it for our whole episode of the podcast. We covered a lot. We will be having some more episodes coming out leading up to the Holiday Bowl. We'll also be looking back on what a crazy year it was in 2025. So we've got some fun shows planned for you guys coming up here leading up to the new year. And then we'll be talking about the Holiday Bowl itself, Arizona versus SMU, which is going to be a great game on January 2nd. And then we've got the Arizona Bowl as well, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop, Miami of Ohio, and Fresno State, Speedy Luke coming back to the University of Arizona to play at Casino del Sol Stadium.
You know what we need to do? You know what we need to do sometime before the year is out, Justin? We need to get Bruce Pascoe here on the pod.
Yeah, we do.
Let's do a big basketball breakdown. They've got at Alabama coming up here on Saturday. Still have San Diego State ahead on the schedule, but we got to get Bruce on the podcast.
That we do. Because basketball's humming right now. Good time to follow the number one ranked Arizona Wildcats basketball team. All right, we appreciate you guys. Subscribe, rate, comment, do your thing on Apple and Spotify. Check us out on Tucson.com and make sure you download the Wildcaster mobile app for free today.